providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, Tom, for the second half of KER Politics. I've got a very, very interesting and knowledgeable individual on the line with me, Dr. John R. Lott. Dr. Lott is the in charge of an organization called CrimeResearch.org. He's one of the foremost experts in the country on the pros and cons of gun control. He's just the guy I want to talk to right now, given the fact of what the current executive branch is attempting to push through regarding the Second Amendment. Just to refresh our radio listeners, what the executive branch is trying to push through right now is to be able to hold culpability on the part of the sellers of guns if a gun which they sold were ever involved in an altercation, they would be liable for it, as opposed to the owner, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. Dr. Lott, I'd like to go on here. I'd like to give you as much time as you want, and I'd like you to make the argument, if this is your argument, and I know that it is, that guns don't kill people. People kill people. You're on, sir.
Oh, thanks. Guns obviously make it easier to kill people, but they also make it easier for people to protect themselves and prevent bad things from happening. And the question usually is, what's the net effect? The change in the liability rules that Biden wants to get through don't really look at the balancing there. If a gun maker makes a defective gun that injures somebody, or if they sell a gun illegally, they don't do the proper background check, either the manufacturer or the seller, and they sell it to somebody who then goes and does some harm with the gun, they are liable. But what this would do is, in those cases where the gun wasn't defective, where the manufacturers and sellers followed the law completely and perfectly, they would be liable for any harm that would occur from the gun. And just think what that would imply if that was applied to other industries. For example, there are 4.5 million people who are injured in car accidents each year. So you have somebody who, through no fault of Ford or General Motors, maybe is texting while they're driving, or maybe they just aren't paying attention for some other reason, and they get into an accident. Should Ford be liable for the medical costs? Should they be liable for the lost wages? Should they be liable for pain and suffering? And what would that do to the car industry if they were to have those types of rules in place? Obviously, it would dramatically increase the price of cars and put probably many of the car makers and sellers out of business, which I think is the whole purpose for this in the case of guns. But, this isn't the only thing that they're doing. Just last week, people may remember Operation Choke Point under the Obama administration, where they would go after industries, firms and industries that they didn't like, perfectly legal firms, and it was primarily gun makers, and put pressure on financial institutions to no longer do business with either gun makers or gun sellers. So if you wanted to have a checking account, you'd be denied being able to have a checking account. If you wanted to have a bank process credit cards, for customers who wanted to buy things with credit cards, they would refuse to do that. It was just a way to try to put gun makers and gun sellers out of business and to make it much more costly for them to do business. It made it so many gun makers couldn't get loans. They couldn't issue stocks or bonds because financial institutions, because of pressure from the federal government, couldn't do that. Well, Trump had started regulatory changes to make it so that the federal government couldn't put that type of pressure on financial institutions who were dealing with law-abiding, legitimate companies. I mean, it's one thing to deal with criminal entities, but to go and deal with a company that's following the law completely is another story. The problem is, in part because of the bureaucracy, that those regulatory changes were not quite finished. They were issued in November, but they have to be published in the Federal Register, and they were just about to be published when the new Biden administration pulled them and kept them from being published. So it essentially means that the Biden administration is going to be able to go back to the same type of operation choke point type rules that existed at the end of the Obama administration and put many, many companies and sellers out of business.
You know, I don't want to digress from this subject at all, but I just want to make kind of one comment from the outside, looking at the outside in. The current executive office is currently looking to, in my opinion, do away with, number one, the First Amendment, and number two, do away with the Second Amendment. Scares the daylights out of me, John.
Well, I understand what you're saying. It's just that, you know, elections have consequences.
Yes, they do,
on this
sir.
Stuff. And, you know, it's not too much that can be done because the Biden administration controls the regulatory process right now. And you're not going to get too much direct help from the courts because the regulatory cases go through the D.C. Circuit, and the Democrats completely control the D.C. Circuit. They have a 7-4 majority on the court there, and you know, so it's not going to be good as far as that goes. And yeah. You know, elections have consequences.
Yes, they do. Well, I got to tell you, I think H.R. 127. If the Biden administration, I don't think it's just Joe Biden. So let me say, if the current executive office really can beat down the Second Amendment, I think that's a harbinger of some very negative things to come from the results of this particular election. And I really mean that, Dr. Lott. There's no question about it. I want to ask you one question because we're going to have to take a commercial break in about 2 minutes. What instigated your interest in this subject, sir? I mean, you're a PhD economist. Near as I can tell, you've never been the president of the National Rifle Association. Is it just common sense, or why do you have this passion, sir?
Well, I kind of got into this by accident. I had done a lot of work on crime. I'd been chief economist at the U.S. Sentencing Commission, and I published a lot of academic articles on crime-related topics. And I was teaching for about 5 years at the Wharton Business School. And one time I made the mistake of telling the students that we were ahead in the syllabus. And, you know, that I had a couple students come up to me after class and ask me, they said, well, they realized it wasn't quite on topic for the class, but they asked me if we had time, if I could spend a little bit of time talking about gun control. And while I had read some papers, academic papers in the area, they were all pretty horrible, and I just assumed that there were better papers someplace else. But when I started looking through it to prepare for the class, I was just pretty shocked how poorly done the existing research was. Mm-hmm. And when you're an academic, one of the reasons why you do research is you think you can do a better job than other people
right,
have done.
Right.
And so anyway, that's kind of what happened there, and just kind of fell into it by accident.
Very interesting thing to come out of a former academician at a great school like Wharton and at another great school like UCLA. Wharton, in my opinion, has probably one of the greatest graduate programs of any university in the country, and I'm jealous that you are on the faculty there and I never was. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a real quick commercial break here. Going to be right back with Dr. Lott. I'm going to talk about his organization, which I would suggest you use as a source of information on this subject.